بسم الله بسم الله الحمد لله والصلاة والسلام على رسول الله السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته الحمد لله we praise Allah سبحانه وتعالى asking to send peace and blessing His beloved and our beloved Sayyidina Muhammad صلى الله عليه وسلم. So we continue in the second session of Hanbali notes on Imam Juwayni's Rahmullah's Al-Waraqat. Before we continue, a very important note regarding there are some even last week and in this week as well. Definitions will be adjusted and expanded upon. But it's very important to understand that Imam Juwayni Rahmullah was such a great Imam, especially of the Shafi'i school and Imam of the Muslims and one of the great ulama in general. That because he was so early on and he's like a pioneer in the field of, there are people earlier than him, than Imam Shafi'i, for example, himself 200 years before, but as someone who had formulated and was one of the pioneers of the science of Usul al-Fiqh. So it's very important to understand that but there are later developments and refinements in the science of Usul al-Fiqh. So if there are adjustments being made or refinements being discussed or definitions that are being rehashed or rearranged and so forth, doesn't take anything away from Imam Juwayni Rahmullah. It doesn't diminish him in any way. It doesn't reduce his status. It is not done out of disrespect or to sideline him or anything like that. Allah protect us from something like that. That this is very far from what it. What it means is that when there are definitions being given or adjusted or renewed or expanded upon, basically that this field developed beyond Imam Juwayni Rahmullah. So there's commentaries, there's later additions being made, refinements being made, and that's all it is. So no way we should take that. We stick to these ulama, we stick to Imam Juwayni and others, but we're seeking the truth. And the imams throughout history, our imams, they were seeking the truth. And in doing so, they had to critique and criticize or critique previous works. And then while maintaining the respect for them, and same time, anybody that critiques someone's work, I use the word critique as opposed to criticize. Critique is more an academic word. So they're academically critiquing the work and they're giving their own view on it, lady imams. And those imams can also be critiqued. They can also be criticized and they can also be, their view doesn't have to be necessarily accepted, even if they're, it's like, for example, like some people have their favorite sheikh today who criticize big imams of the past. What's stopping us or anybody else academically to criticizing that? And we've seen that happen. There's some imams that criticize the early imams, especially like the Imam Hanif rahmullah or other imams, they critique them, right? Or try to critique them. Well, what happened within a generation, within their lifetime, other imams, ulama rose up and they critiqued them in defense of those early imams, and so the followers of that sheikh who was alive till recently were kind of shocked that their sheikh is being critiqued. Well, he was doing the same thing to other greater imams. As long as it's done in a respectable manner and it's not to diminish people, it's more about getting to the truth, then you generally won't have a problem. The problem is followers, I was listening to Mufti Taqi Usmani from Pakistan, and he was saying something the other day, our problem is that we raise them so high that we put them into the clouds. And if he's on our team, on our side, and if he's not in our group or our understanding, then we reduce them down to the lowest of the low. As for the set, we go even like, we really like go overboard. So Imam Juwayni Rahmullah is one of the imams and the Muslims, we maintain his respect, despite the fact that his definitions might be critiqued. All right. So just this is from Dr. Mutlaq's class explanations, where he mentions the two types of definitions of Usul al-Fiqh. One way is to define it, is to define the individual words, which is to define the compound of the two words, Usul al-Fiqh. So Usul al-Fiqh, the Usul of Fiqh, right? The principles of Fiqh as individual words. And we understand Fiqh to be, it's there, just mentioned a little box, to know the Ahkam of Sharia, the ruling of Sharia. Ahkam was explained last week. Of Sharia via ijtihad. As we mentioned last week, it excludes those definitions, excludes those Islamic sciences, such as, for example, aqidah, because Aqeedah is not up for ijtihad generally. Like you don't make your own aqeedah up, right? There's no new rulings to be added to aqeedah per se, or some other Islamic science where it's there's no room for ijtihad in there. So it's ahkam of sharia, the ruling sharia that is derived from ijtihad. Or those ahkam, for example, is fard, salat is fard. That is not up for discussion whether salat is fard or not, because it's such a clear-cut thing in Islam. So there's no room for ijtihad on the fard, it being fard in salat. Just give me one moment. So those salat, for example, is not up for, apologies for that, is not up for, like the fardiyat of salat, whether salat is fard or not, is not up for discussion. He defines, what I'll do is I'll read this section from Imam. I mentioned this last week. You should get this. You can get it on Amazon. It's not that expensive. It's delivered in most Western countries. You can probably find it somewhere online as well, like an e-book or whatnot. But this is Sheikh Musa Ferber's. This is a riwayah that's different from Dr. Mutlaq's Arabic one, because there are variations, slight variation changes in the riwayah of the book. So different students at different times have recorded from Imam Juwaini the Waraqat. And of course, there's slightly omissions and so forth because these were handwritten manuscripts. The version that I have in front of you in the slides, which I went through last week and I'll go through, is Abu Amina Ilyas, his slides. That's one variation. And then there's another variation of it as well, which I'll share. Combine into it. So, but it's 99% the same. There'll be like a word or sentence a little bit different. I'll read this to you first, and then we'll go through these slides explaining the same thing as well, inshallah. This is Imam Juwaini's, Imam Jalaluddin, Jalal Mahalli's explanation of the Waraqat. If you have the book in front of you, be good. We'll just read through it and then we'll go through the slides. Yeah, so today we're talking about clarifying the meanings of knowledge, suspicion, and doubt. So fiqh in the legal sense is more constrained than knowledge, ilm, since ilm holds true when pertaining to grammar and other things, as all understanding is knowledge, but not all knowledge is understanding. The word ilm means knowing that which is known, perceiving that which is by its nature is known, as it is in the reality. Example, a human perceiving that he is a sentient animal. Ignorance, jahl, is conceptualizing something, that is perceiving it contrary to it as it is in reality. Example, a philosopher perceiving that the world, which is everything other than God, is without beginning. Some have labeled this kind of ignorance as compound ignorance. I'm going to explain all these terms to you after, but I just want to read through it first. And define simple ignorance as an absolute absence of knowledge concerning something, such as our absence of knowledge of which lies beneath the earth and in the depths of the seas. But according to what the author mentioned, this simple ignorance is not considered ignorance. Compulsory knowledge, al-ilm al-daruri, is that which does not depend on pondering and inference. For example, knowledge taking place through one of the five outward senses, hearing, sight, touch, smell, and taste. Since knowledge occurs simply by sensation without pondering, nadhar, and inference, istidlal. Acquiring knowledge, al-ilm al-muktasab, depends on pondering and inference. Example, knowing that the world is created. This is because knowing this is dependent on contemplating the world and the changes we observe therein, and then deducing from its changes its having been created. Pondering nadar is contemplating. So Imam Juwaini is explaining words for the science. Before you can go into the science, these words are used in specific ways within a science. There is still a heart of science. The word might have other meanings elsewhere. We learned last week about sahih and batil. We know sahih here means something, that the action is sahih, but sahih in hadith sciences means a authentic hadith, which is a different meaning. Same word, right? A teacher telling a student that his answer is sahih is different to the muhaddith saying the hadith is sahih, different to a usuli scholar, usuli scholar, an expert usul, or an usul book or a fiqh book saying this action is sahih, right? So the same word, depending on the science, and the expert that's employing it can have different meanings. Nadhar is contemplating the state of the object of contemplation in order to lead to what is sought. Inference, istidlal, is seeking evidence, that is dalil, in order to lead to what is sought. Hence, pondering and inference lead to the same thing. Evidence, dalil, is what guides to what is being sought, since it is an indicator. Probable, dhan, or you can say speculative as well, is when two matters are possible, with one being more apparent than the other, according to the beholder. Doubt, shak, is when two matters are possible, while neither possesses a feature distinguished from the other. So when this indecision concerning the assertion that Zayd is standing and its negation is equal to, it is doubt, it is shak. When its assertion or negation is preponderant, then it is probable, it dhanni. The meaning of jurisprudence. The base of law, usul al-fiqh, which are the subject of these papers, are its ways in general, that is. So then Imam Juwayni rahmullah gives a summary of the, you can say it's like a fahras or like a contents of the book. A summary which will go through each one in detail. Each one has its own chapter. Commands, awamir, nawahi, prohibitions, actions of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, consensus, ijma', analogical reasoning, qiyas, and presumption of continuity, istishab. In that it leads to knowing that it is first, that first is for obligation, the second for prohibition, that the rest are proofs, and other things that are forthcoming, along what is associated with them. This is the contrast to the individual specimens of those general ways, such as establish the prayers, do not approach illegal sexual relations. So when there's a word that is used is dalil ijmali, the dalil tafsili. Dalil tafsili is the masal specific ahkam. We're going to go through this. While dalil ijmali, which is usul al-fiqh, the principles of usul al-fiqh, right? The science of usul al-fiqh, the qawa'id, the maxims of that science, right? They are general dalils that can be applied to many rulings. And I'm going to give you an example of that, inshallah. So he gives some example here. Establish the prayer, do not approach the illegal sexual intercourse, that he, sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, prayed inside the Kaaba and was transmitted, as a transmitted in Bukhari Muslim. The consensus that the filial granddaughter of the deceased is entitled to 1/6 when the deceased is deceased daughter is alive, provided that neither is accompanied by a universal inheritor. The analogy that rice is similar to wheat with respect to the prohibition of transaction where both of the items sold. And anyway, it gives many examples of the specific cases. Specific cases is the realm of fiqh or furu', while usul deals with principles. These are not part of the basis of jurisprudence, even if they are mentioned in its books as examples. So these are given examples, right? Aqimus salah is given example as of amr, a order that is given in the Quran, right? So it's given as example. Here is an example, but the discussion of usul al-fiqh is the amr, the nature of amr, the nature of the amr of the order, not the specific order of the specific thing. The base of law includes the above and the manners in which they are used for inference. That is what the ways the base of fiqh are used for inference from the perspective of using instances of evidence when they conflict, as they are probabilistic. Why would things conflict? Because they're probabilistic, they're dhanni. They're not qat'i, absolute, right? Such as giving precedence to the particular over the universal, the qualified over the categorical and others. The way in which these are used for inference leads to the characteristics of the one who used them for inference. That is the mujtahid. These three, right? The abstract ways of fiqh. Or usul al-fiqh specifically is abstract in its nature. It's principles, right? How they use for inference, how you get to derive rulings from them, and the characteristics of the mujtahid. These are the three areas of usul al-fiqh. Are the discipline named the usul al-fiqh or the basis of jurisprudence, since fiqh depends on them? And then there are the topics of jurisprudence, which is a list which we'll go through afterwards. But these are the summary of what we're going to cover today. So back to this slide. So usul al-fiqh is a compound of two words. Fiqh, that is to know the ahkam al-sharia with ijtihad. He says that fiqh is more specific than ilm, and says ilm is to know what is known, that is ma'lum, according to what it is. Right. So now, I'll go to the slide in a moment. So second, but I have to come back here again. That jurisprudence, fiqh, is more specific than knowledge. Fiqh is a more general term than ilm, right? Which is defined, and ilm is defined as the knowing of what is, knowledge is to recognize what is known, ma'lum, right? As it is, exists in reality, right? While ignorance, jahl, is to imagine something differently than it's in reality, right? So now this definition has been critiqued by other imams as incomplete, or maybe even they've said deficient. And they've actually refined it and reviewed this and added to this definition. So the fiqh is more specific than ilm and says that ilm is to know what is known, that is ma'lum according to what it is. The objection, how can you call it ilm ma'rifah? This is, in itself, this is circular reasoning. You're going around in circles. What they do is they replace ma'rifah with idrak, which is to realize something. So that ilm is to realize. But however, this definition is also objected to. So they've come up with a definition, and they said that how can you use the word known, ma'lum, in the definition of ilm, right? Do you understand what I'm saying? Like the if I say to you, knowledge is to know, right? So now knowledge itself is from know. So you're using, like, that's not really a definition. That's a deficient definition. You're using the actual word to define the word. It's like saying knowledge is knowledge. So there's an objection raised by some usuliyin that how can you, because they use the word idrak, which means to realize something, to grasp something. But they said this can also be objected. So they said it is to realize something, right? And then they elaborate on this example that idraku ma min sha'nihi an yu'lama fi waqi'. So this is like it's similar to what Imam Juwayni is saying, but worded in a way that doesn't break the logic of the discussion or the definition. So it is to realize about something and to know it in reality, how it should be known in reality. That's the definition of ilm. And jahl, so why do we need to know the definition of jahl? Again, similar to last week, the opposites will clarify for you the actual thing. If you know the opposite, then you'll actually know the thing. So to know its opposite is to know the actual thing itself. Jahl is to imagine something against its reality. That's a short. There's an objection to this, that jahl, there's two types of jahl. There's a simple jahl and a compound jahl. Simple jahl doesn't come into this definition, right? Because in simple jahl, you don't use tasawwur, you don't use your imagination or your mind, right? So a complete definition will be, so for example, simple jahl is what is behind the wall, right? A murakkab, a compound jahl would be, I'm praying, so for example, zuhur time, someone comes into the mosque praying zuhur, and you say to them that you're not praying, he said, I'm going to pray Isha. You tell him it's not Isha time, it's zuhur time. He says to you, no, I'm going to pray Isha, right? So he's ignorant of the fact that he's ignorant. So this is called compounded or complex, you could say, jahl. It's a jahl upon jahl. Or jahl basid, not knowing something simple, like what's behind the wall, called jahl basid. So the better to combine these two definitions, because the definition lacks that preciseness. So a complete definition of jahl will be, it is to negate idrak. It is to negate huwa al-intithaa' idrak mutabiq waqi'. So it is to negate realization of to be in accordance with reality, what actually is happening. This sort of combines both types of jahal murakkab and jahal basir. We'll go on to the next slide and continue. Just move this slide here on my computer. And he comes to the ilm a second time. So the next part is وَالْعِلْمُ الدُّرُورِ مَا لَمْ يَقَى till the end. Unavoidable knowledge is what is called ilm الدُّرُورِ. This is one translation of it. Unavoidable knowledge is what does not result from reflection or inference. Reflection means nadar, and inference means istidlal. In Arabic is istidlal. such as knowledge of reality by one of the five senses, which are hearing, seeing, smelling, tasting, and touching, or by unanimous reports or tawatur. So now he's coming to this definition here. We're going through the definition of usul al-fiqh as a science. For example, ilm al-dururi, like, let's say there's a paper here, a book in front of me, you say this is cold, right? Or piece of paper that's cold, right? This is an immediate knowledge that you attain from touching the paper without actually directly from the senses, without any proof or argument, without any nadhar, right? Reflection, proof or argument, or you can say reflection and inference, right? Without any reflection or inference, without any nadhar or istidlal, right? This is one another way to translate it. So for example, you need some reflection that there is a country called, you know, any country name. All right. Is there a place called Alaska? Does it exist? I've never been there. I never experienced it. Its existence is known, clear cut. Like we know it or that it's raining. The sense tell you that it's raining, right? Or somebody comes to you that it tells you, one man tells you, you can say this is dhanni. This is, you can doubt it. But if many people come and they tell you, like 20 people come, it's raining outside, then you're compelled to accept it. So this is the last one. One is a census. The other one is by unanimous reports, tawatur. Something is mutawatir. So it's like tawatur is like the inability to take a new morsel of food. You're full to the point where you can't take anymore. The proof is so compelling, right? It becomes like the senses. It's direct and it's absolute. If 10 ulama say something, generally, like a large amount of scholars says, I mean, like you can't, it's like we said, jamhur, all of the scholars have agreed upon this, right? There's another type of, so these are the unavoidable, ilm al-daruri, like you have to accept it. You can't reject it. That which you, by the senses you get, if it's hot or cold, or you see something directly, then this is undeniable. It's unavoidable. Same thing with tawatur. Then there's the ilm that is called muqtasab, that the ilm that is ilm that is or ilm nadhari, right? By reflection, you can say that that it's a ilm that is there's a definition that I have on the slide, the Imam Mardawi rahimullah, in his book At-Tahbib Sharh At-Tahrir. This you could say second point, humbly note, Dr. Mutlaq put on his version of Waraqat in the footnotes, in terms of defining knowledge, that it's a characteristic by which you differentiate, such a differentiation that is decisive, conformity to reality. Decisive conformity to reality, right? And there is no inclusion of the senses, the five senses, into it. Like it's an absolute knowledge is something that can be defined like that. Wallahu alam, for our purpose, for usul al-fiqh. Let's continue. As for ilm that is muqtasab, as for acquired knowledge, it is dependent upon reflection, inference. So it's the opposite of ilm al-daruri, right? That the Quran is a book of Allah is ilm daruri, right? For example. Or there's a country, state, a place called Alaska or Fiji. You've never been there, but you 100% accept that there's a place called Fiji. Is there, if by, it's something obvious. As for acquired knowledge, it is dependent upon reflection, inference. You have to reflect on it. You have to nadhar and you have to do istidlal. Reflection is thought upon the situation under reflection. Inference is seeking an indication. An indication guides to what is sought as it points out to it. So muqtasab, so for example, it is makruh to come into the masjid after eating garlic, and it is makruh. Now we know this, that it is makruh to come to the masjid when you eat garlic, you have a bad smell. This can only be possible after fikr. You take a dalil tafsili, a specific dalil, which is a hadith of Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, preventing us from coming to masjid like that. Then you join it with a dalil ijmali or a qaida, a general principle, right? And then you have with faham, the tools of faham, understanding. the tools of understanding and mental tools, you use that, and then you result in a hukam of called makruh, right? And so this is not possible daruratan, the previous way, like the five senses, like the paper is cold, cold. But it's istidlal and nadran. It's through istidlal. It's through reflection and inference. This is the only way you can get this hukam, right? Nadar doesn't mean literal nadar. You know, like we have nadar sight. It's used for nadar is also ayn, like evil eye as well. This is nadar meaning reflection in this mental reflection, mental reflection. Fikr, sorry, I just lost the slide. The word fikr is used there. So if you look at the wa'amul ilm muqtasabu fuhu al-mawquf ala nadhir wa sidal wa nadhir hu al-fikr. And said that reflection, so the translation given there is reflection. Fikr is a reflection. It is the harakah, the movement internally in that which is conceivable. You think about something, fikr, about that which is maqulat, that which is conceivable. If you think about things that are imaginary, then in Arabic it's not called fikr, it's called khayal. In Urdu you say khayalat, you know, like just you're thinking about like a man with a horse's head. Now you've got something in your mind now, a man with a horse's head, like an imaginary thing. It doesn't have a reality. So this is called khayal. But fikr about that which is conceivable, which is ma'qul, which the brain can accept and has some reality, this is called fikr. Istidlal, the definition is given there, and in the above definition here, is seeking an indication, is seeking a dalil. A man who shows you the way is a dalil, right? Street signs are called dalils, right? This is linguistically used to dalil. So that tells you something. It's something that points to something else. In istilah, in the terminology of usulin, is that which is possible to attain, reach proper nadar, that which is possible to attain or reach through proper nadar, right? In a certain news, in a certain khabar, right? So in a, you by inference, dalil is that way you reach a proper nadar, proper a proper reflection, right? A proper inference. So, and just remember this, dalil according to the usuliyin, the usuli scholars, does not just mean the Quran and Sunnah, right? It also applies to qiyas. These are derived from the Quran. Everything goes back to the Quran and Sunnah, but qiyas, ijma', like Imam Malik's school was the amal of Ahl Medina, the qawl of Sahabi, fatwa of Sahaba. Like Imam Malik radiallahu anhu, his view was what? He used to, the marfu' Quran and Sunnah, obviously. Then, like, he had the view, the qadaya, the judge, the mursal hadith, the hadith where the sahabi is omitted. Technically, it falls under da'if hadith because tabi'i narrating from Rasulullah Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam. But according to Imam Malik, Imam Hanif, Imam Ahmad, this is still a hujjah. And you can take fiqh from this hadith, which might be classified by muhaddithin as da'if because a sahabi is missing. But for them, the reliable tabi'in, like Sa'id and Musayyib, whose hadiths are all accepted, if he omits a sahabi, he's reliable anyway. So, right? So mursal hadith are taken, right? According to Imam Malik, Imam Hanifa, Imam Ahmad, Hanbal, Rahmullah. Types, Imam Malik also then takes from the qadaya, the judgments of Umar, the 10-year khilaf of Umar al-Khattab. So many rulings, new rulings were passed, judgments were passed. It's not just a mufti giving. He was a mufti, he was a mujtahid, Imam as Umar al-Khattab, radiallahu anhu. But he was also a great, he was a khalifa, Amir al-Mu'mineen as well. Sitting ruler of the Muslim was a mujtahid and dealing with judgments over a decade. So the Imam Malik relies heavily on that. Then on the fatwas of Abdullah bin Umar, his son, who was vouched for by many Sahaba as having the most istiqamah through all the fitan and trials that Sahaba went through. Sayyidina Aisha and other senior Sahaba said about the istiqamah of Abdullah bin Umar, how much strictly he stuck to the way of Rasulullah despite all the trials and difficulty and problems, said other people change, but Abdullah bin Umar did not change. So for Imam Abu Imam Malik rahmullah, he's a pillar of the in the jurisprudence of Imam the Maliki school. Types of qiyas, right? There's different. So some of these imams agree upon as proof, some don't agree upon it. So so the point mentioned that dalils, when the usuli talks about a dalil, he's not just talking about Quran and Sunnah, he's talking about all these other dalils that derive from the Quran and Sunnah. The Amal of Ahlul Medina, when Imam Malik is talking about Ahlul Medina, he's talking about the Fuqaha of Medina. He's talking about the children, grandchildren of Sahaba radiallahu anhu, who are the imams, authorities, narrators of hadith, Fuqaha, muftis, judges of Medina Munawwara. Right. Sometimes an issue doesn't have a direct nas, a text from the Quran and Sunnah. Right. Like, for example, removing the hair from the armpits and private parts for ihram. It's mentioned in all the books, right? Where is this from? If there's no direct hadith or ayat or anything like that, so then the imams, they've done this qiyasan on for Jum'ah and Eid. In Eid, where you're told to remove it, then they've extended that to another place where you do ghusl, which is for ihram. Unfortunately, many people today, due to ignorance and jahl and limited understanding, they say, no, no, Quran, Sunnah. But then when it comes to detail, those imams that came, they were following Quran and Sunnah better, not just at a superficial level. They were following it at a very deep academic study of it in a principles and systematic way. So nothing is missed out, that we have a thorough understanding applicable to all new situations the Ummah might bring up. These people, they have a superficial understanding. They have a mistaken understanding what the science of fiqh is. Those who study usul, which are the usul is the perfect study of the Quran and Sunnah. Usul of fiqh is a deep study of the Quran and Sunnah, right? Not at a superficial level. So new situations, new ahkam will have to be derived for new circumstances. The greatest dalils are the Quran and Sunnah, but they are also the proofs for these principles, these other dalils that the usul is used, that the basis for them are the Quran Sunnah. But we know that not everything literally directly is in the Quran Sunnah, but they are derived from the Quran Sunnah based with these tools. These tools, these other dalils, actually make the Quran Sunnah applicable to all situations. Else you get stuck and your understanding of fiqh and your ibadah will be very limited, meaning that you won't have actually ahkam to apply. These tools, these dalils, actually expand the scope of the Quran to be applied in all situations. Also, we can process them in a systematic way. And like Sheikh Dr. Mutlaq says, if you need a nas specific to you, like I need a specific dalil to tell me about that modern banking, you know, as an example, that is interest riba on it, as an example. Because if you need a dalil for specific every situation, right? For example, I'll give you a specific thing, like a drug, the drug heroin, as an example, is this haram or not? Is it haram or not? All right, find me a hadith with heroin in or ayat al-Quran directly with those words in it. Obviously not, right? Obviously not. But the principle of usul al-fiqh will allow you to derive a ruling. And we know it's haram because we have a basic understanding of this principle that this thing is intoxication, is haram. So so now that Imam Juwayni has defined ilm, he's defined jahl, right? He defines those idraks, those understandings in between. We're going to read through now. Zan, shak, and waham. So zan is tajweez amri ahaduma adhar min akhar. Suspicion is the sense. So you've got ilm, you know something, and then you've got jahl. In between, there's a gray area, and he's defining that gray area. So something is absolute ilm, we know that it's like this. Something is total ignorance, we know that. In between, there are things that are made up of partly ilm, partly jahl. So the first thing is dhan, suspicion or speculation in the present, two possibilities, one of which is more likely than the other. This is dhanni, it's maybe this or maybe that, but more likely this. So we said this is a dhanni, it's more strongly like this, but it's not 100%. There's an element of ignorance, jahl in that. It's not absolute, right? The second one, shak, doubt in the present, two possible, neither which is more likely. Now you got two. It could be this. It could be this, but I'm not sure which one it is exactly. So there's shak now. This is called shak. And then there's a third one, which is waham, which is the opposite of dhan, right? I'll get to that in a moment. So before you go into the details, Dr. Mutalak mentioned in his class that before you go into the details of a science, try to summarize into one page. This book is one of those books that you can summarize as notes, shorthand, as a cheat sheet. I don't know if you know what a cheat sheet is, if you study at school or university. So a cheat sheet is like, I did a cheat sheet for my iftar, the mufti course, one of my teachers for iftar on how to write fatwa. So he had a 14-pager summary of fatwa, which is quite a compact summary. I compacted into a one-pager, like a process for fatwa, into a one-pager. He said, where'd you get this from? I said, it's actually your notes. This is your 14 pages. I've summarized it into one page as a cheat sheet, so it's before me when I'm writing. So the thing is that you can summarize. This book is one of those books you can summarize into one. So Dr. Mutalak, why? It gives you like a map, right? It gives you a map of the science. So try to summarize this into a one-pager, into charts and diagrams and whatnot. If you're studying this with me now or with another teacher, then you're able to, it's like going into a town. You have a map with you. So this is like the map. So you can sort of make your way out the outlines. What does a map show? The main roads, right? The main highways. But as you get closer and closer, you're in an aeroplane. I think I mentioned this last week. You're in the aeroplane. You're flying very high. You can see all the main roads or maybe the cities. As you get closer, right? As you get closer and deeper into the science, you will see the roads. You start seeing cars. When you're on the road, you can see all the shops. You can see where everything is specifically in each neighborhood. And you can see the people and so forth. Similarly, also in this science, this book is to give you like a outline. It gives you like a basic structure of what this science is about, what's involved in it. It's not to teach you every single thing, as was mentioned last week. Right. So the example Dr. Mutal gave in his dars is that there's water outside the window. Is it rain? Dhan tells you it's rain. It's not 100% that it's rain. It could be a hose. Somebody could be hosing. You look and see water coming down the window. Could be somebody washing. There's a possibility someone. But most likely it's rain, right? So this is still dhanni. It's a dhan. It's a suspicion. It's speculative. Right. By nature, it's the best word. Probably suspicion is probably not the best word. Speculative is probably the best word for that. So he's outside. There's the multiple possibilities. If a person is outside, is so-and-so outside? This is for Shak. He's giving the example. Doubt is the presence of two possibilities, neither of which is more likely. So there's multiple possibilities. A man is outside. Yes, he's outside. He's not outside. Right. So this is called Shak, 50-50. He's outside, not outside. This is different to Jahl. Right? When you say he's outside, does it mean outside of the house or outside of the town? He's totally not there. Right? But the rain one example is like a yes, no answer. Right? The other one could be defined as jahl, where you totally don't know whether he's outside or he's out anywhere else. He gives a jahl is ignorance in its entirety. It's not a choice between two. While shak is a choice between two. So for example, like if you know that in a box, there could be one or two, one thing or another, right? You might have you could say, does this have a pen or paper? And you've only put the two. Then you're ignorant. You have 50-50. You don't know if it's paper or a pen in there, right? But if you say, this is a shak, because it's a 50-50 choice. While jahl is that if you say something is in the box, I don't know what is in the box. There's something in there, but I don't know what it is. So the list could be so long without limit. There could be a pen in there. There could be a paper in there. There could be a book in there. There could be, it's on and on and on. This is jahl, right? It's unlimited. So I have shak, what is in it, but jahl. Shak is to limit something to two matters. For example, is it raining, not raining outside? Waham is the opposite of dhan. I was mentioning this before. Waham is a mistake. It's not mentioned here in the book, but waham is a mistake. It is opposite to dhan. Dhan chooses the two of the most likely, two situations, the two circumstances, the two possibilities are there. You choose the most likely one. Waham is to choose opposite of dhan. It is incorrect view, right? It's to choose something in a matter opposite to what the reality is, right? Now we're coming to the continuation of, so these are explaining the words. The second definition is of usul al-fiqh is that it combines everything, and he puts it here in this line there, the knowledge of the fundamentals of jurisprudence, right? The knowledge of the fundament, the knowledge of usul al-fiqh are its general methods and its mode of drawing inferences, right? Are its general methods and the mode of drawing inferences. And something else that's not mentioned here, that there's another definition elsewhere, that is the proofs that are ijmali, dalils that are ijmali, as I mentioned before, the principle, the general rules, right, as opposed to specific situations. And the method of deriving benefit from them or utilizing them, so their methods, and the situation of the mustafid, the one that utilizes them. So utilize the ijmali proofs, the ijmali, dalil, adillat ijmaliyah, so adilla, the proofs of fiqh that are ijmali, meaning the principles as opposed to specifics, and how to, the methods, right? And the people who use those methods, which are the mujtahids, right? So for example, adillat ijmaliyah, the adillat ijmaliyah or the ijmali proofs are what? The principles of usul al-fiqh. For example, amr, an order, is for, makes things wajib, or a nahi, a prohibition, makes something haram, or the action of Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam is a proof in Islam. It's a hujjah. Ijma' is a hujjah. Sahaba's qawl is a hujjah, or ijma' of sahaba is a hujjah, right? The tafsiliyah, adilla tafsiliyah, the second one is specific, you know, like aqimus salat, right? When these come together, like amr lil wujub, amr is for, is wajib. We're going to go through this later on. Amr is something, when amr is given, order is given, the Quran, it's for wajib. And the specific case comes, for example, aqimus salat, establish salat. When they come together, the tafsili and the ijmali, the general principle and the specific ayat or hadith or other proof comes together. When both of these come together, you get what's called a hukum shar'i, right? A shar'i ruling. Or another word that is used is fara, right? And the science of usul al-fiqh only deal with ijmali. It gives this examples, as I mentioned earlier, it gives examples, but its real field is focused on those principles, elaborations on them, refinement of them. It deals with principles, right? For example, Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam forbid men from wearing silk, right? Now, there's a rule in the Hanbali fiqh that salat is batil for silk for men. Where is this rule coming from? This is a Hanbali combining an ijmali principle, a ijmali dalil, right? A principle, which is specific to the Hanbali madhab, that which is forbidden necessitates fasad, spoiling of the action. That which is forbidden, right, will falsify and negate the action. I hope you understand what I'm saying. Silk is haram. If silk is worn by a person who prays salat, by a man who's forbidden, not a woman, a man is forbidden from wearing silk. If he wears silk and prays, his salat is invalid. According to the Hanbali, because of this principle, annahu yaqtadi fasad, that prohibition necessitates fasad, the spoiling or negation of the action. For example, in other madhabs, they don't have this rule. So for example, it's haram in the Hanafi madhab to steal water. But if you made wudu with it, your wudu is valid. In the Hanbali madhab, that wudu is stolen. Since it's prohibited to take that water, it's stolen. And you made wudu, your wudu is invalid. Right? Basis. So it affects, there's a consequences of these usul in the furu', the masail that are derived from it. And that salat with the silk would be invalid. Also another hukum, for example, al-amr, an aura, a command, necessitates fawriya, right? That the action should be done immediately. If an amr is heard, is known, it should be obeyed. So for example, the Hanbalis, when it comes to the atimul hajj wal umrati lillah, fulfill the hajj and the umrah, the ayat of Quran, that fulfill, complete the hajj, perform the hajj and the umrah for the sake of Allah. Based on the Hanbali madhab, amr necessitates immediateness, fawriya, you know, to do it immediately. That if you amr, it means based on a principle of the Hanbali school that an amr is given, it should be fulfilled immediately. Meaning that the next hajj, if you have all the means, you fill all the conditions, it is wajib on you to fulfill in the next hajj. You cannot delay it. The Shafi'i say that no, fawriya is not a requirement. Immediateness is not amr does not necessitate immediateness. And because it doesn't necessitate immediateness, you can do it next year, the year after, as long as you do it. Yes, it's wajib upon you, but you don't have to do it immediately. You don't have to do it in the next hajj. At your leisure, whenever you can, the second, third year. Right? So these two madhabs on this issue, for example, the Shafi'i Hanbalis come to different conclusion. One is saying if you delay, it's a sin. The other one say, no, it's fine. Based on this principle in the school, this is a dalil of their school and a principle, which is based on the asal is different, right? And this is the problem with some modernists. Because they don't stick to a systematic madhab or school, a coherent school that is consistent in all the masail. So the Hanbalis are consistent in the hukam of it being immediate across the board, and the Shafis are consistent otherwise, in reverse. Because they are consistent, their mazhab is coherent and makes sense. A modernist comes in and one is picking it from here, one is picking it from there, and they're making a mess of things, and it's not coherent. That's why within the madhabs, within the schools, you will see that if an imam says something based on the principle of the school against the principle, they'll point at, according to the usul of our school, it should be like this, so this is a mistake. They'll correct the person based on the school, the principles, the qawaid, the dalil ajmaliya on these principles. Someone picks up hadith of Sahih Bukhari without understanding usul al-fiqh, how a hukam is derived, because the hukam is secondary after the engaging dalil properly. So it picks up Bukhari and says that he saw this and doesn't know the rules of the language. A lot of usul al-fiqh, as you'll see, deals with language, and you know, doesn't understand the differences, and basically just grabs it and says to someone, it has to be like this, without understanding how this fits with everything else. Mind you, in the school, in a madhab, there are debates about this. And between the madahib, like for example, on this issue of the hajj, right? Immediateness or not immediateness. There is debates, arguments, counter arguments. It's thoroughly debated and defended. The positions are defended by each school. The imam is defended at usuli level. That's where they engage in this debate, at an usul level. All right. And just remember that a mufti is not a mujtahid necessarily. A mufti is not a mujtahid, but every mujtahid is a mufti. And there's a definition here given on the next page from a version of the book Dr. Mutlaq used. Usul al-fiqh turuq ala sabil ijmal. Its ways are that which is in comprehensiveness, meaning that the ijmali, their principles, as opposed to wakayfiyat istidlal biha, and how to use those principles, those ways, to derive infra rulings, وترتيب أدلة في التقديم التأخير, and then how do you arrange the dalils, right? What's your way? How do you? What's the hierarchy of dalils, and how is a dalil understood, right, in relation to another dalil, right? That might give you a different answer. How do you prioritize the dalils? What's the hierarchy of dalils? So that is a whole usul al-fiqh. Are the methods? Are the ways of deriving inference, are the order of dalils, are the orders of, the neighbors are playing something very loudly, the methods of proofs in, just give me 1 second. apologies, some noise was coming in the background. And that which is related to the last thing. So there's three things. The methods, proofs themselves, and the order of the proofs, hierarchy of the proofs, and also that which is related to ahkam, related to the mujtahideen themselves, who's able to actually engage and do this. So there are, this is not in the version that I'm going through in the slides. In one of the, some of the versions of Waraqat, this is mentioned. There are other versions as well. And okay, the last slide, we'll just get to it. This is more of a summary of all the topics. It's like a fahras, so it's just a summary of all the topics that we covered. Topics of fundamental jurisprudence are types of statements, commands, prohibition, general and specific, ambiguous and clear, apparent, interpreted. Until the end, I won't go through it. All of these things will be covered, inshallah, topic by topic, chapter by chapter, the next 7 weeks, inshallah. We've got another seven sessions after this. There's a one of the things mentioned from last week was what's a fard and the difference between fard and wajib. In generally, according to majority scholars, fard and wajib are synonymous. They're the same thing. In some other places, especially like, for example, the Hanbali madhab, that which you leave in salat forgetfully, you can make it up with sajda sahwa is a wajib. While that which you leave, even like, for example, Fatiha, if you leave it, even unintentionally, you have to repeat the salat. So it cannot be made up with sajda sahwa. Or in wudu, for example, there are six wajibat. Washing the face, including the mouth and nose, washing the arms, wiping the hair, washing the four limbs, or washing the feet up to the ankles, and doing it in order and doing continuity. Saying Bismillah is a wajib, not from, saying Bismillah is a wajib, the other six arkan or the fard, right? The six fards and one wajib. If you miss the wajib in wudu, right, and you remember afterwards, your wudu is fine, right? And it can be defined as fard is that which is coming from, is yaqini, right? That which is coming from sources that are certain, while wajib is dhanni, is speculative. Like it can be debated that this is not compulsory. And that is, in short, that's today's lesson, inshallah ta'ala. May Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala give us understanding of dalil, istidlal, and all the matters, inshallah. This is just definitions and beginning of the subject. And then next week, inshallah, we'll start on the first section about the types of speech, etc. Any questions? Any questions? Yeah, I won't answer the wudu question now because there's a discussion around that. Some say that it is, some say it's not. So no questions. There's a discussion around that wudu question. So somebody asked me direct question now. There's a discussion around it. So some say to recommence it, and others say you can bring in the middle. But more cautious would be to restart the wudu. Wallahu alam. No questions, inshallah. Jazakallah khair. I hope it was clear because it's not an easy subject topic to communicate. Unlike wudu, the ibadat we did last semester or last before Ramadan, wudu is a bit more easier, or salat, or all the actions, they're very easy to picture. Usul al-fiqh is so abstract sometimes, as you see as you're going forward, that it's to understand it sometimes is challenging, but then to teach it is also challenging as well. Inshallah, I hope you have understood. Just go over the slides, and I would advise you to, if you really want to sort of get a grasp of it, this is a good book, along with the Hanbali notes. And if you can, if you know Arabic, then Dr. Mutlaq's version, you can study. If you know Arabic enough, then you can read his version, which is the same, but it's got those Hanbali notes at the bottom, which I'm referencing sometimes, inshallah. Jazakumullah khairah. May Allah give us understanding. Subhanallah bihamdi. Subhanaka Allahumma bihamdika. Nashhadu an la ilaha illa anta. Subhanaka rabbika rabbil izzati amma yasifun. Wa salamun alal mursalin. Walhamdulillahi rabbil alamin. السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته.